Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Oh, I feel so comfortable. I'm feeling really alive.
Hey, thanks for being here. My name's Caitlin.
My name's Jamie, and this is the Bechdel cast. Thank you so much for being here. For those of you who have never heard the show before, why don't we tell you a little bit about it?
We talk about the representation and portrayal of women in movies, mm-hmm. using the Bechdel test as a jumping off point to initiate that larger conversation. Hey, Jamie, what the hell is the Bechdel test?
Okay, calm down. I'll tell you.
I'm furious.
It's a media test invented by a cartoonist named Alison Bechdel. It is a test that requires in a piece of media that there be two female identifying characters who have names, who speak to each other about something other than a man for two lines of dialogue. Or that's the way we define the test.
Yes.
You think it would be easy, but all 1,200 hours of Lord of the Rings do not pass. So it is, and that said, it is still very easy. We're psyched to be back at the Ruby. We love the Ruby. Give it up for the Ruby in Los Angeles. And we've got a real treat tonight in terms of movie and guests.
Yes, so let's bring her out before we get any further.
We're turning to the Bechdel cast.
She's a very funny comedian. You've seen her on Conan, and you know her from our Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone episode. Mm-hmm. It's Maggie May.
Maggie May! Hi!
Yay!
Hey, what's up?
Hey guys.
How are you?
Good. I'm pretty good.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, hey.
We can't wait. So, we're talking about Bring It On.
Yeah, clap if you have not seen Bring It On.
Wow. Everyone did their homework.
Wow. Okay, we love good pupils. You are rewarded with whatever trash is in our pockets at the end the show. So thank you so much for coming.
Yes.
Bring It On. What a film. 2000. You know, and if you've listened to episodes about movies that come out between 1998 and 2002, it's a precarious time for passing the Bechdel test and acting ethically.
Yeah.
It's a very precarious time.
Indeed.
So we'll figure out what side of that late 90s, early aughts spectrum we fall on tonight.
Yes. So, Maggie, we'll start with you. What's your history, your relationship with the movie Bring It On?
Okay, so I love the movie Bring It On. I was a cheerleader.
We didn't even know that when we asked you to be our guest.
Yeah, I was a cheerleader like all the way through. I went to a magnet high school that did not have sports, but I insisted on doing independent cheerleading for like a year.
Wait, were you like a lone operative?
Yes, it was not beneficial. I was like to all the rest of the nerds, because this school was like number 77 in the nation. It was number 7 in the nation at its heyday. And I was like, hey, everybody trying to get into Harvard, who wants to cheer? And they were like, if you don't get the fuck out of this computer lab right now.
So you had nothing to cheer for, but you pursued it.
Cheered for, like, you know, masterminds and math squad.
You went to, like, math competition, like, mathlete competitions?
They did not let me go, but I cheered from home. I cheered from home.
That's so cool.
Amazing. So you're a fan of the movie. Yeah. You were a former cheerleader.
Yes.
Hell yeah.
And it came out the year that I was a senior, so okay. I was able to watch it and be like, I would have been going through all this bullshit if I would have gone to a regular high school. It's like, what if?
Great. Jamie, what's your history?
I remember the first time I saw this movie was at a sleepover that I was not cool enough to be invited to in middle school, which is a real treat. It was because Ryan Cheatham, who was one of the coolest girls in school, liked me when I was 7, and she just decided to, like, she was one of those merciful cool girls who was like, no, I know Jamie sucks, but we're gonna let her hang out with us. Like, she would be negging me constantly, but would also let me come. And I was honestly so grateful to her that she would let me be there. So I was thrilled to be there, and they're like, we're watching a movie about cheerleaders. And I'm like, awesome, yes, cool. Let me study. So I don't remember much about watching it the first time because I was so nervous to be at that sleepover. Oh. I was just like very aware of my posture and like whatever was going on with my body. I just was like, maybe this is my big chance. It wasn't. But so I truly, like, I'd seen it. I vividly remember watching it, and I didn't remember anything that happened. Okay.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'd seen it a few times and had a weird traumatic memory attached to it.
Okay.
What about you?
I saw it only one time before prepping for the episode. Mm-hmm. I was in high school, I think right around when it came out. I don't think I saw it in the theater. But I do have a vivid memory of the scene where Eliza Dushku wipes her fake tattoo off and then does a bunch of gymnastics. For some reason, that is like emblazoned into my memory.
Whoa.
And then I remembered nothing else about the movie. So
it's a good moment.
Yeah.
That was the main point in the movie.
I mean, it's iconic. So I, you know, this movie is fun.
It's super fun. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to love here.
There's a lot of stuff to love. There's a lot of stuff to be like,
There was more to love than I thought there would be going in, which is always nice.
Sure.
And also watching this movie, I understood parts of the Thank You Next music video I hadn't previously understood. I was like, why is Ariana Grande brushing her teeth for 5 minutes? It was a reference to this
Don't
movie.
Don't you love seeing like a reverse reference or like understanding what a reference is?
Yeah, and then being like, teehee, I get it. And then 5 months later being like, I see.
That was a lot of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Growing up, I was like, oh, that was even funnier now.
I used to sneak watch Frasier at my house. When I was in like elementary school. It's my little personal rebellion that I do. Crazy I wasn't invited to sleepovers. But I would always be like, haha, I understand. I'm 10. I know these Baroque musicians. They're joking about. I probably still wouldn't understand. But I love, like, I it's weird how like young you can be when you condition yourself to pretend to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
It's a defense mechanism.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You're laughing like, when everybody else is laughing. Or like they kind of have pauses where you're like, I bet you that was a joke.
Yeah. You're like, okay.
That's some shit I didn't understand. We'll start giggling.
I'll do the recap.
You'll do the recap.
Okay, I will. I certainly will.
That's how it goes.
So we meet Torrance Shipman.
Tor.
Tori is she.
Why is her name like Torrent? What's
and
her
name?
And
then also the team is called the Toros. That had to have been on purpose by the screenwriter, I'm guessing, but it was a weird choice. Yeah. Anyway. So yeah. Kirsten Dunst is Torrance Shipman.
She's also isn't Torrance a place in California, do? Is it?
Is it? Yeah.
Yes. I was just like, there's a lot of weird. I was like, where are they going with this?
This movie was real on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
California, what do we know? Her boyfriend's name is Sam Diego. Oh, no one used that. I want to use that.
Yeah, that's yours. Okay, so she is a cheerleader in high school. Like I said, her team is the Rancho Carne Toros.
Rancho Carne? What the hell? Yeah. Can I just say Rancho Carne? What the fuck? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. We open. She's cheering in front of the whole school about how awesome cheerleaders are, and then suddenly she's naked, and it's like, oh my god, it was a dream.
And you know it's a dream because we're learning all of the women by name, which would never happen in real life. I was like, of course this is a dream sequence. We know what their names are.
Yeah, true. And then we meet her boyfriend, Aaron. He's about to move away for college. And then it's the start of Torrance's senior year of high school. And the cheerleading squad is voting for the new team captain because Big Red, I guess, has graduated, even though she's still there.
That is very true. I mean, but like, that's true of cheerleaders. And like, I was on a dance team in high school. Brag, thank you so much.
Wow.
Like, I feel like there are, like, people who are, like, too into high school sports and activities that go to nearby colleges, and they're like, I'm just going to come by. And you're like, don't. Like, it's weird. It always makes you look weird, but I don't know. That tracked for me. Big okay. Red, she was clearly not, you know, adapting very well freshman year because she was always lurking around.
She was around.
High school. Yeah. She was around.
Didn't she show up still in her cheerleading uniform a couple of times?
Yeah. I was like, man. She needs to move on.
Yeah. Like, you are not going to make it, Red.
Yeah, go to class. What are you doing?
She's like, in between anatomy and physiology, I'm going to go scare the hell out of my high school. Watch this.
So then Torrance gets voted new squad captain.
Yes, Kirsten Dunst, who is in every movie between 1998 and 2004.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then this new boy moves to school, Cliff. She is vibing with him. He loves the Cliff Clash.
Pantone. All the names are so weird because Pantone is like the name of a color company.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And then Cliff.
Okay, so she's vibing with him, and then there's a spot on the squad because someone gets injured, and now they have to hold tryouts for...
Great opportunity for an audition montage.
Oh, and we
love
get
it.
One. Everyone...
I thought this was the thing for Pippin. It's a great audition.
Wouldn't you believe it? Everyone who tries out isn't
They're
the
a little
right
weird.
Fit until we get to Missy... That's Eliza Dushku, and she is rough. She is tough. And she's like, I think cheerleading's stupid, but your school doesn't have a gymnastics team, so this is my last resort.
And we know all the hard, tough people are on the gymnastics team. That's the logic this movie subscribes to. They're like, you know how the gymnastics team is terrifying? All right, sure.
They're all like goth kids.
Dominique Luciano just shot somebody, okay? Yeah. Don't fuck with us.
She vaulted off the beam and shot someone in the kneecap.
Like, that's upside down like the Matrix. And then stuck the landing.
I would love to see that movie. Incidentally, this screenwriter also wrote Stick It, that gymnastics movie that came out in 2006. Yeah.
This writer had two interests.
And they're very related.
They're flips and more flips with pom-poms.
So Torrance sees Missy's potential, but the other cheerleaders are like, ew, gross.
She's a goth.
Yeah.
But Tor, she's a goth.
With like hair that like vaguely resembles dreadlocks, but like not quite.
Yeah, that hairstyle toes the line.
So Torrance goes and tries to convince her to join the team, and she's like, fine, I'll do it. And then we learn the twist that Cliff and Missy are brother and sister. So Missy goes to practice, and she sees the burr. It's cold in here.
There must be some Toros in the atmosphere.
I said, burr. It's cold in here. There must be some Toros in the atmosphere. Shoot.
For the listeners at
back
home.
Back into my cheerleading days.
You can really see that solo work coming out.
Yeah, see?
The independent study work.
When you do it by yourself, you don't have to be on rhythm.
Yes, for the listeners
you
at home.
Find your own beat.
Maggie just got up and started dancing, and it was glorious.
Full choreography. Yeah. It was incredible. Yeah.
Y'all missed it. You should have been here.
Yeah. So she sees that and she's like, hey, you guys stole those cheers. Let me prove it to you. Mm-hmm. And she drives her from San Diego to Los Angeles. That's a 3-hour drive, by the way, on a school night. And shows her the Clovers from East Compton doing the exact same cheer. And we learn that Big Red had been traveling to this school, taping
their cheers.
Yeah. Putting in a lot of effort. And it's like, if you have all that time, you might
choreograph your own. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was going
away. How'd she even know about them?
Yeah, I'm like, in 2000, where would you have found out?
Yes. They don't have a webpage.
No.
I can tell you
there's
that much
no
right
way.
Now.
I was like, okay, I guess we're just here for the ride.
Yeah. So they go and watch it, and the Clovers, the team captain is Isis, that's Gabrielle Union's character.
Also in every movie from 1999 to 2004.
And Isis is like, hey, white ladies, you stole from us.
That is the line that she says.
Yes. But it ends now, and this year we're winning nationals. Mm-hmm. And Torrance is upset. She didn't realize that the cheers had been stolen. So now she's like, hey, squad, we got to come up with something else. A new thing for regionals that's right around the corner.
Isn't it always?
It's always.
That's how I hope in every conversation. Like, regionals is right around the corner. Well, then she says, like, we have to get a new routine. And the squad is kind of like, no.
Right.
We know Burr. We're doing Burr.
We're doing Burr.
It's still cold in here. I'm in a jacket. Okay, we're doing it.
Burr works for us.
But yeah. Then the Clovers show up to one of their football games and like, hey, the cheer that you're doing,
scene.
We also invented that one.
That's a great scene. I like that.
That was a good scene.
Watch it twice.
Just watch that scene. That's all the whole movie you need to see.
Also in that scene, this has nothing to do with anything, but I think that the movie keeps making a play to be like, Cliff is a little different. He's an intellectual. So he's at that football game reading The Human Ape.
I looked
up the book. It's like a famous sociology book about evolution. So they're like, no, Cliff, no. He's not a sports boy. Rather, he's a Darwin boy. Like, I was just like, what is the point of this?
He's going to voluntarily show up to a football game no one asked him to be at.
No one invited him.
And do homework that no one asked him to do.
Everything with Cliff is a reach for me, but that was one of the reachiest reaches of just like, no, he's smart. Check this shit out.
But he loves the Ramones. So
he's not like the other boys. He's not. He's not. It's so weird.
He reads books.
He's a book Ramone man. You know the type. There's so little.
Oh, God. Okay, so then Torrance's boyfriend, Aaron, who is like actively cheating on her, recommends that the squad hires Sparky Pilastri.
Another winner of a name, Spirit Fingers.
That name sounds suspicious.
Yeah.
Sounds suspicious as hell. Sound like he's going to try to sell them knives and shit. Well,
it also sounds like Sparky Pilastri sounds like you've already had to change your name more than once. Because that wouldn't even be like someone's first choice for an alias. Like, they'd be like, well, Sam Diego didn't work out. Gonna go for Sparky Pilastro.
Oh, right. Okay, so then they hire him, but he's expensive. He costs $2,000.
No!
So they do a car wash fundraiser, which is an excuse to show a bunch of teen girls in bikinis.
I didn't find that gratuitous at all.
No. Meanwhile, Cliff and Torrance, they're vibing. They're riding pretty hard.
I swear to you can cut Cliff entirely out of this movie.
Get him out of the movie.
The movie is no different.
Said he does not help the movie in any way, shape, or form.
No. Yes.
He helps the movie nothing.
Yeah. He just, yeah, cut Cliff. He's trim the fat. He's,
yeah.
Him and his damn books. Get him out.
I bet you they forced that into it. Like in Hunger Games when they forced Gale in, they're like, we need a love interest. They probably were like, let's put in a complex bad boy with
It totally does seem like he's like a studio, like a sentient studio note.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's like put in a convenient place. We're like, oh, what if Missy had a brother who didn't play by the rules? Like,
the Pantones are a family of badasses.
The Pantones are also a parentless family. Like, they're in this huge ass house. And then she, at one point, Missy's like, oh, they're at a benefit. They'll be fucked up for days. It's just like, what is going on with your parents? They seem like very wealthy alcoholics. Mm-hmm. And good for her.
Cut the Cliff storyline and make the advanced chemistry class that she has to take, make that a storyline where she learns about chemistry and finds out that she loves it.
Women in STEM careers.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes, that's right. What,
we need women in STEM who also are cheerleaders.
Yes.
That's my new hill
no
to die on.
Damn bad boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't
cut
no
the
damn
bad
man.
Boy. He wasn't even bad. He just brought a book to a football game. It's not bad. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Anyway. He's a good student. Your bad boy is on honor roll.
He's like, yeah, this is kind of bonus work, however.
So then Sparky shows up. He criticizes everyone on the team.
Oh,
and
my
then
God.
He,
very creative body
it
shaming.
It was necessary, I felt.
Sure,
very
sure.
Necessary.
He's like, everyone develop an eating disorder or stop eating altogether. And that whole scene.
That's
and then
super helpful.
Yeah. Oh, it totally helped
young
the team.
Women. That was helpful for me to see. On.
It was a good reminder to stop eating.
Yeah,
And then he whips Missy with a towel.
Oh, yeah.
And he isn't fired.
He is not fired. Yeah. He is very bad at his job. He's obsessed with spirit hands.
Fingers.
And everyone's...
I heard a few angry...
Fingers?
Yes, and there were a few people who were like, in the crowd.
I'm so sorry.
Spirit fingies.
I'll go ahead and cancel myself.
I like this dude in the front row when you said spirit hands. He went... he twinkled his fingers like, girl.
True, and you're right. It's true.
Okay, so spirit fingers, and then... Oh, yeah. And they do end up with a routine that, like, no one's really excited about. And then we cut to regionals.
It's not a good routine. As a cheerleader, it's not a good routine.
Yeah, Sparky's a hack.
You would know.
Yes,
he's simply a hack.
The Toros are at regionals. The Clovers are at regionals. And then the team that goes right before the Toros does the exact same... fucking Sparky Polanski, whatever his name is.
They're double dipping. He's double dipping. He got $4,000. Imagine the damage he could do.
Well, the judge says he did it to six different squads. So that's $12,000. And the judges are like, we don't know what to do about this. You're not disqualified, but like, make sure you come back with a new routine at nationals.
Right. Also, the Clovers do a great routine at regionals.
Yes.
And then there's a few different, like, short confrontations between Gabrielle Union and Kirsten Dunst. And this is, like, one of the good ones where they're, like, all laughing at the Toros. And they are right. It's funny.
Yeah. Yes. And then Aaron, who for some reason is still Torrance's boyfriend, tells her... you're not Captain Material, and like, just give it up. And then Cliff finds out that she has a boyfriend, and he gets mad.
Right.
Rude.
Then, well, because she was leading him on, dude.
Yeah.
Him and all his books.
Courtney and Whitney try to mutiny her and withdraw from nationals altogether. But Torrance is like, no, this is our chance to show that we are the original people that we thought we were, but actually we're not. But we can do it. And then they practice really hard. They come up with a new routine.
Mm-hmm.
Torrance breaks up with Aaron, and then they're all ready to go to nationals until they learn that the East Compton Clovers aren't going because they couldn't raise money for the trip.
Right.
Torrance... is hell-bent on them going because she's like, they're the stiffest competition, and if we want to show that we're the best, we have to beat the best. And then she gets her dad to sponsor the Clovers.
Big daddy moment, yeah.
But Isis tears up the check. They refuse. Yes.
That was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that part too.
Yes.
Great. I was scene. Like, take that, Savior.
Yeah.
Yep. White knighting into our school. Shit. Mm-hmm. I didn't even go there.
And then the Clovers end up getting sponsored by a talk show host that's from their neighborhood, and then they are able to go to nationals. Mm-hmm. So both teams are there. Isis says, bring it. Doesn't say bring it.
And then we're like, on.
But she says most 2/3 of it. And so we're like, oh, yay.
And we appreciate her restraint.
Yeah. And both teams make it to the very final round. And they both put on a great show. Mm. They have great sets, solid tight fives, you know, da-da-da-da. And then the Toros get second place. The Clovers win first place nationals. Congratulations to the Clovers.
And then a kiss, because we can't close out the movie without a Cliff kiss.
Wait, hold on. I'm just realizing, did Cliff go to Daytona Beach?
Yes.
He got on a flight last minute from San Diego to Florida. Diego.
He should be in school, right? Like, this is...
His parents really were fucked up the whole time. They're like, where are our children?
Why did they have to move? Like, we don't know what the story is.
All right, so that's the story. Give it up for the Clovers.
Okay. I like with the live shows where we're like, clap for the plot now.
It works as a seamless transition whenever I need to insert the ad break is what that's all
I
about.
I love it.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where to begin?
Oh, well...
Let's start with Torrance.
Okay.
So Torrance is the main character. She's played by Kirsten Dunst. I didn't realize until more recently kind of like this stock character that Kirsten Dunst plays where she is very popular, but she's also nice. I feel like she takes up a similar role in Drop Dead Gorgeous, mm-hmm. in Spider-Man, where it's like she always is like this like white blonde girl who's very well liked by everybody, and she has a code of ethics that she abides by, and we're like, all right, sure, you know. But then surrounding her are like popular girls who are bitchy and mean, yeah. and out to get her, like Denise Richards in Drop Dead Gorgeous, and in this movie, Courtney and Whitney.
Yes,
but she plays this very like sweetheart, virginal, snaggletoothy little thing.
She has snaggletooth?
Yeah, it's her thing.
Oh.
Am I like crazy? That's her, like she brags about it.
She needs to be in a
call out.
Here's the thing.
Call out.
Someone told us from the end she has small teeth, which
yeah,
means
she's called out as a small tooth.
She needs to be cast in a Bruckheimer joint to get those veneers.
Those Bruckheimer veneers that I love.
Yeah. But yeah, so she's surrounded. She's like the nice, yeah. popular cheerleading captain surrounded by wretched people for the most part.
Yeah, but she always plays sort of like this person with a moral center. And that like sort of translates throughout a lot of her roles. And this is like a really good example of one of them. I mean, it's weird. She's kind of all over. I feel like in general, this movie shows more sympathy towards Tor than is necessary a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Where there's a lot of like empathy that should be placed with Isis and with East Compton that is instead given to Tor in wait. Like during the scenes, every time she realizes she's accidentally plagiarized again, we're supposed to feel terrible for her.
Right.
And it's like, someone just has to be fact checking this. Like when Tor and Missy go to East Compton High and Missy's like, look, this was a stolen routine. Tor's like, no, oh my God, this is I'm so embarrassed. And like, we're supposed to be like, no, Tor, don't be sad. It's okay, girl. But it's like, no, we should be like upset for Isis. Like there's just a lot of moments where we're supposed to feel bad for Kirsten Dunst where I'm kind of like, whatever, fix it. Like, you know?
That is the big thing about this movie for me is that it touches on like race and appropriation because it is effectively about a group of largely white upper class teens stealing from a community of, I think everyone on the Clovers is a person of color. Mm. So they're stealing from people of color, yet the movie is told from the point of view of the white people. And for most of the movie, the Clovers, the people of color, are poised as the bad guys that we're supposed to be kind of rooting against because we're rooting for the white people.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because they're the protagonists, like, this is like the common story. You know, white women steal from us all the time. That's like how that is. But like the fact that they put, I always found it weird that the Clovers were seen like as the bad people when they were getting ran amok the whole movie.
Right. Reimagine this movie from the Clover's point of view, because then it's about like Isis and her squad working very hard creating original cheers. Mm-hmm. Then they see like two white girls snooping around on their practice who belong to a squad of like all white people
3 hours away, which still blows my mind.
It should not be told from the point of view of the white people.
Yeah.
We should be rooting for the people whose cheers
were
stolen
and
appropriated.
It's so weird. Yeah. It sort of feels like a weird cop out for Kirsten Dunst's character to never know. And so we have her as sort of like this channel of like, oh, I hope that she makes it right. Like, because I feel uncomfortable with that. And I really hope that Kirsten Dunst and her dad figure this out. And I don't, yeah, there's a lot of moments that there's just like some dissonance, and like, you know, we watch it in 2019 and it's like, that's not how hopefully most of us feel.
Yeah.
But the movie so clearly feels certain that you're going to feel that way, that like Kirsten and her dad are going to solve like white women stealing from like black women. That it's just bizarre.
A white man is going to solve the problem of white women stealing from black women.
Daddy is actually the missing piece here. What if Daddy were here?
Well, I was so worried that it was going to become a white savior movie,
right,
where she's like, "My dad, I took money from my dad and I'm giving it to you." And I'm so glad that that's not what happened. But I can't help but to think, and this is a theory, let me know how you think about it, but I feel like ISIS rejecting the money was not the writer of the movie's deliberate attempt to be like, hey, I want to make sure this is not a white savior story. I think it was more to make ISIS and the Clovers seem like more scary, mean adversaries.
Yeah.
You know
also,
what I mean?
I know it was 2000, but who the hell named her ISIS?
Also crossed my mind.
Yeah. Did not appreciate. I was like,
this movie just really is bad at naming anyone.
Yeah.
Really bad.
Let's put the other team, ISIS and Al-Qaeda.
ISIS is an Egyptian goddess, question mark?
Wow, master's degree, okay.
Yeah. So I'm hoping she was named after that.
I think this was pre-scary ISIS, I think, right?
By a long time.
But I mean, they could have gone with Kim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kim wasn't off the table.
they're like, no, Torrance versus ISIS. It's like, oh my God. This movie comes on really strong. I don't know. I don't really know.
Like, here's why I think that. Because the movie frames the Clovers as, quote, the bad guys, and like adhering to, for a large chunk of the movie, the stereotype of the angry black woman. So I feel like that her tearing up the check wasn't, you're like, oh, this isn't a white savior story. It was more that, like, we're mean and we're not going to take your money because we're mean.
Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to try to reason with you, and we're not going to try to let you make it right. We're just going to be mad about it.
Right. That's how I interpreted it. But I think
I don't know. I mean, I guess the only counterpoint I would have to that is there's, for so much of the movie, it was like, I was like, when are we going to get to learn anything about like the individual characters on the Clovers, because it's so deep into the movie that you find out even remotely anything, and the closest you get is that scene where they're writing the letter to the talk show host, where they're like vaguely describing their economic background, they're vaguely describing what their plan is. It's clear they have a plan to get to nationals no matter what. So because that scene came right before, like the only moment we got with them came right before that, I'm hoping that the writer was trying to at least give ISIS a moment and try to help the audience understand where she's coming from. It doesn't go nearly far enough in just like developing the interior lives of anyone on the Clovers, which is like, why do we waste so much like real estate in this movie on fucking Cliff? When half the cast is being ignored for the whole movie, like cut Cliff and let's like learn about ISIS and all of her and the girl group Black, who are the only other teammates on. Did anyone else listen to that group in like 1999? One of them is on Real Housewives of Atlanta now. Yes, okay, I've got someone with me.
We've got a fact checker in the audience.
I've got a fact checker who's constantly Googling everything we say. But we don't get to know anything about those characters. And this, the closest we get is the scene that comes right before that. I feel like it's clear at least that Tor was deeply misguided to do that. I don't think it goes far enough, but I hope that that's the implication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll never know.
We'll never know. I mean, yeah, everyone involved with this movie is dead. So there's no one to check with.
Okay.
I was like, we should tweet at him right now. Yeah. But they did.
To keep going on tour, there's a lot to talk
about. Going on tour?
Going on tour?
Ah!
like we're gonna do to the East Coast. Anyway,
we, plugs are later. I mean, we know more about Tor than anyone else in the movie. We arguably know too much about her to the point where I don't care. There was one scene with her mom that I liked. We don't get, which is weird. It's weird that there is like this whole scene with Tor and her mom that is like generally positive, but we never really go back to her mom again, right. And so it kind of ends up not mattering. But they're doing the back and forth of Tor's mom is like, "You cheer too much. Take a math class."
And then Torrance is like, "You hate that I'm not a genius. You hate that I'm an idiot."
I like that. I like that. Mediocrity visibility. We need more of that.
Yeah,
there are mediocre people everywhere, and they're not. We don't see them on screen.
I mean, we do. We
do
a lot.
In female form, ever.
Sure, we do a lot to like champion, like you know, women's education and stuff like that. But Torrance was just like, "I don't really care about school. I only care about cheerleading, and you're just gonna have to accept that, Mom."
And then she was like, and then her mom's like, "Take a science class," and Torrance is like, "Fine." And that's the whole scene.
And that should have been a subplot, not Cliff.
Right.
Anyway.
That's another great use of the time that we waste on Cliff.
Yeah.
But let's talk, well, we're on the subject of Cliff.
Might as well.
There is, of course, a like vague, poorly constructed love triangle in this movie with Aaron, Tor, and Cliff. I've never cared less in my entire life.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So Aaron is a male cheerleader who Tor is in a relationship with. The use of queer jokes in this movie is just horrible.
Ooh, yeah, we'll get there.
But Aaron is cheating on her with a bunch of girls in college, basically, and he's just a dick. He tells her he doesn't believe in her, and that's juxtaposed with this creepy scene on a swing. Where Kirsten Dunst, okay, I just want to walk you through this scene with Cliff.
Please.
Kirsten Dunst is on a swing. She's just had a conversation with Eliza Dushku. She walks off. She's going to do some cheerleading thing. And then all of a sudden, Cliff swoops down, twist. He's been on the swing set the whole time. You're like, oh my God. He starts to push her on the swing. This is a sinister thing that perverts do to children before they kill them. And Cliff's pushing her on the swing and then just like pulls the swing back and then whispers in her ear, "For what it's worth, I believe in you." And then she's like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah."
He's just the fuckiest of fuck boys.
He's so hurt. And then she, that is supposed to like give her the motivation to not plagiarize anymore. Like it's
right.
So ridiculous. She should very obviously arrive at this point, like this conclusion on her own. Just Cliff, they're using him to like motivate her to be a better cheerleader, but he's yeah. Just like there, plays the guitar.
And then he like feels very entitled to her, like whenever he
yeah.
Makes the mixtape, he has the flowers, and then he finds out that she has
a boyfriend. I mean, it's
not
really a mixtape, it's a fully produced original song.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
It's like Rebecca Black's Friday. It's like it's someone was paid to do production on that.
He just charged it on his parents' charge card like he did everything else.
They're drunk. Doesn't matter, dude.
When did we go to the studios?
Yeah. Oh, well, we were at a benefit. We're still fucked up.
There's like a full, there's like drums. Either he plays all those instruments or he like hired a band.
He hired a band. He hired the Rebecca Black people to do it. It's so funny. And it's like one of my favorite things that happens in movies is when someone composes an original song and you can tell the movie is like, this is going to be a fucking hit. And it's just like not. That's what this song is like. Where he's like, "You're a cheerleader. I like want to kiss you and finger you." And Kirsten does this like jamming and she's like, "This song is really good." And we're like, "You're not fooling us." She's jumping on the bed without a bra. Like she's just like all the stops are pulled up to make this song seem presentable.
And she conveniently picked her pom-poms up to dance to this bullshit song. I was like, I did independent cheerleading to the chagrin of everybody. Everybody's chagrin. And I have never once, while dancing, picked up my, well, let me get my pom-poms and really, really turn this up right now. I'm gonna listen to some shitty music right now.
It's
never happened.
I forgot the music that the Toros and the Clovers performed to at the end, and I was like racked with anxiety of like, she's gonna dance to the song, they're gonna do a cheer to the Rebecca Black Friday song, like, but thank God they just used jock jams. My main thing with the Cliff thing is, he's there, he's entitled, he's kind of like random in terms of, he's all over the place in terms of what his character is. He feels like a studio note.
Yeah.
And he shouldn't be there. Like, there's just no need for that subplot.
He's a PSA to future parents to tell their daughters that they love them. So they're not susceptible to these random, I believe in you kind of bullshit. Tell your child you believe in them so they're not out here falling in love with people making stupid ass songs for them at the mall and shit. Tell your child you believe in them.
Any man who composes original music for you, that's a red flag. Somewhere on the internet, there's a couple of mixtapes about this was like early 2015. I was dating the fuckboyiest fuckboy ever. And he wrote a song about how he liked me, and then I rejected him, and then he wrote three songs. About, and he wrote one of the songs I think I've played for you before. It's called Your Body Is Dumb.
Maggie left? Okay.
It's out of here. Can't even be here for that anymore. Your body is dumb. Give me this fool's email address. Send a letter to his mom.
Anyways, he's a father now.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Should we get into the just enormous list of horribly problematic things that get said and done?
Yeah, let's do your power listicle.
Yep. All right.
Let's do it. It's very 2000. Starting. Get ready for it to be very 2000.
Oh boy. Starting with there's a scene in a locker room where, by the way, teen girls are undressing. They are in bras and underwears.
I thought that was more tastefully done than most movies.
I mean, the worst one that comes to mind is Carrie, whenever Sissy Spacek is just fully nude. And
that doesn't, that locker room scene has never taken place on Earth. Ever. It's like everyone's fully nude, groping their own titties in the shower. I'm like, in. Yeah, no.
I guess
there
I just,
are stalls.
I guess I just don't.
90% of high schools have stalls.
I don't see the need to show teenage girls in next to no clothing.
I agree.
In a movie.
Especially when it's a cheerleading movie. You don't need to add that extra layer of like, ooh, sexualized cheerleaders, and oh, they're taking their clothes. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Do better.
No, at least there's no, I guess what I'm saying is that there's no gratuitous, like it's not as gratuitous as most of these movies tend to be.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's still needless all the same. So in that scene, we have a number of girls calling each other sluts, whores, bitches. They're fat shaming each other. Mm-hmm. There are the fun lines that, as a wordsmith myself, I appreciated. Like she puts the itch in bitch, and she puts the whore in horrifying. Does pass the Bechdel test.
It does.
Spoiler.
Good pass. Good pass, gang.
And then there's also a weird moment where they're talking about Big Red and how much of a bitch she is.
Oh, and they call her,
Courtney and Whitney say, she doesn't have feelings, just testicles.
Right. Which is just like bad writing, as are most of these bad
jokes. What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Yeah. You know when you don't wear your feelings? Okay.
She doesn't have anger. She has wisdom teeth.
Like, it's like, you know this invisible thing? It's actually a body part.
Well, since it's testicle specifically, I guess they're saying like, ooh, she's mannish.
She's manly because she is not emotional. Yeah.
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 So
it's just, I didn't know what to do with that line either. No. I just put question marks.
I have a lot of those as well.
Yeah.
Then they're doing some cheer practices, and there are some male cheerleaders.
On every team, there's male cheerleaders, which I thought, and there's a few bad jokes about it, but not half as many bad jokes as I thought there would be.
Sure.
Except for one big one that is, oh boy.
Oh, yeah. I do like that the male cheerleaders are like, they're present, but they're like mostly sidelined. Like this is a very female driven movie. So
but I like that they're around too, and they're like on the team and on every team, it seems like. I don't know shit about cheerleading. I don't know if that's normal. I didn't know.
Yeah.
I'm learning.
So here's some lines that some of them say. Pinch some panties. Someone's slacking. Again, what does that mean?
I don't know.
It doesn't sound good though. And then do I look like a milkmaid because someone feels like a cow? This is in reference to one of them lifting up one of the women on the team.
Right.
So that's some body shaming stuff right there.
Body shame these women just because he's weak.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't in the gym. I didn't lift myself. My job is to lift.
Right.
And it's 5 extra pounds and I can't do that. Like, this is your problem, Philip, or whatever.
Phil. Yeah, I'm good to go with that name. Yeah.
Sounds like some Philip shit.
The names are Jan and Les. of the male.
What genius. Are these names?
I don't quite know.
Come on, man. She
this
knew what
is
she
a
doing.
Mess. This is just a word jumble.
Let's see. There's the scene where during the tryouts, one of the girls is trying out to sweet cherry pie. Scene.
Oh yeah.
She's doing a very She's sexy dance, and there's a lot of male gaze, like shot, like the camera is like in her asshole.
Well, not just that either. The women in the scene are like one gags. I'm like, you know what a woman's body looks like. This.
Right.
But one girl's like, ugh! And then the guys are like, ooh.
Oh, Bonar.
Yeah, Mia Bonar. I was like, we don't need this. Cut it. Don't need that.
Also, during the tryout scene, there are various jokes made about people with disabilities and like competing in the Special Olympics and things like that.
There's also the Pippin guy, though. You got to get
there's
him
the
that.
Pippin guy. So it balances.
That was like the only line I remember from the movie. Is this not the audition for Pippin?
You know it's not, bruh.
Yeah.
In the gymnasium, dude. Come on,
he's
man.
He's on fucking bath salts. He doesn't know where he is. He also looked 40, too. Like, where do you think you are?
It's all suspicious. A 40-year-old dude, like, is this not the audition for Pippin? I'm supposed to be here. I'm a student.
I go here.
Trying out for Pippin.
Another great place, if we cut Cliff, we could really explore that. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Where's the spinoff?
Yeah.
So also in the tryout scene, there is a girl named Jamie who is Whitney's younger sister.
Thank you.
A lot of the cheerleaders on the team want her to be on the squad because of how small she is and how easy she would be to lift up, which again has some like body shaming implications. And then
just being weak implications.
Which, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I think it's Jan who makes like a blowjob gesture toward like Jamie,
which again I
like,
don't know what it, I don't know what's even implied, but no, he makes
12
that.
Like what is he saying?
That was another thing that was unclear because he's making it at Tor, and I thought maybe he was being like nepotism, but I'm like, what does nepotism have to do with dick sucking? I hope.
Well, in a in the few lines right before that, he makes a comment about how again this like 12 or 13 year old girl goes down or like does sexual stuff to get what she wants. I don't know. Like
God,
that.
She's visibly 12.
Yeah, it is. It,
I didn't even think she went there. I was like, Whitney went and got her 9-year-old sister.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like problematic stuff, but like it's confusing. Most
it's
of
like
the time.
It's like uncanny valley stuff where you're just like, I think that I'm not okay with this, but it doesn't fully make sense.
Right.
It was like at that time where it was like, we are this kind of a movie, but we're gonna be talking about other stuff. We're gonna push it to the limit in every possible way. And it's like,
Well, because this movie is like PG-13 or something.
Yeah.
So I think it's trying to like navigate around, like it's trying to do some innuendos that just like didn't age well or never made sense. Like I'm not
it's
totally
trying to
sure
toe
which.
That line of the R because they know no one is going to go see that if it's an R.
Sure. Right, absolutely.
You know, like it's not going to, so they're like, we want to get as close to an R as, because this movie is for 13-year-old girls.
Right, and that was like who saw it and who, you know, at the sleepover.
It's edgy for a 13-year-old.
Yeah. Don't worry, there's more. Okay, we've got Courtney saying about Missy that she looks like an Uber insert slur for queer women here. And then she uses that word several times in a hateful way throughout the movie.
Mary 2000.
Yep. Torrance's brother to Torrance says, it's not my fault you're in love with a big gay cheerleader who doesn't return your calls. Torrance says, he's not gay. And then he says, oh, so someone just made him become a cheerleader? Okay.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, it's not necessary.
She's like, he's just busy. And he's like, yeah, busy scamming on guys. And then that scene.
And it's like, actually, he's actually scamming on girls.
Lots of them. So, every girl.
Because there were all these, like, I mean, and I wasn't sure that this movie wasn't above that cheap joke of just being like, he's a male cheerleader. He must be gay, you know? Mm. But then you see Aaron wake up at his dorm and he has both a Sugar Ray and a Matchbox 20 poster. And you're like, no, no, he is straight. And a very bad kind of straight.
He's the most sinister heterosexual there is. Uh-huh. He's got both of the devil's posters.
He's a take a guitar out at a party kind of motherfucker. Yeah. He's that kind of straight. Yeah.
And then they put a villainous turtleneck on him later on. I was like, no, no, no.
Oh, yeah. Bright red.
He's a bad man. He's just bad.
Also, that scene ends with Torrance's brother calling her a bitch. So that was very cute.
They put the little brother. Okay, one point in the movie where I did laugh is where the brother's like, it's an emergency, and then he farts. You gotta admit, that's a funny joke. I laughed.
Okay.
It's crazy how sometimes a fart is better than anything you could write in 500 years.
I should have never gotten that master's degree.
No, you could have just been like, I don't know what to put here. Write a kid named Justin and he farts.
Okay, next comes the big one for me, where they're all in a car.
The car scene,
yes.
Yeah.
The male cheerleaders, Jan and Les, are talking about their sexuality, and then Missy's like, well, what is your sexuality? Which is, you know, maybe none of her business. But, and then Les says, Jan's straight. Well, I'm controversial. Missy says, are you telling me you speak insert slur here? And then he's like, oh, fluently. And then Missy proceeds to call Courtney and Whitney a slur. And then
okay, so to prove his straightness,
yes.
Jan, is Jan the straight guy?
Yeah.
Jan goes on to describe how he molests cheerleaders. He's like, no, I'm super straight. I am a rapist. Like, you're just like, oh my God. Like, he describes, well, do you have the specifics written down? I was horrified.
It's like, I'm so straight, it's problematic.
Yeah. I'm so straight, I should be in jail. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy. And then everyone in the car is like, ha ha ha.
Oh, the reaction.
You're out here molesting our friends.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Jan's like, no, Courtney is straight. I know this because she doesn't wear underwear, and I can't help if my digits slip occasionally.
Okay. Number one, your digits ain't going to slip doing a chairlift. That is not a thing that's you intentionally doing it. Two, if you would be concentrating more on your form, you'd be able to lift more. And not worry about if anyone gained an extra pound. So maybe keep your hands in the right position for maximum. I'm going to just tweet this at him.
The finger.
Tweet it at the actor. And another thing.
It is so, like, weirdly on the nose, though, to be like, no, it feels like a weirdly, like, it sounds like modern satire to be like, no, I'm, a cishet white dude. I'm a fucking criminal. Like, you're just like, this is not helping anyone. This is not. What are you?
Yeah, and then the whole car full of people are laughing about it. And then, because it's basically saying, like, oh, she doesn't wear underwear, so she's asking for it, is what the movie is trying to say here.
Right.
And then a few
And it's also not
later,
logical that she wouldn't wear underwear, too. It just, like, goes out of the way to make one of the female characters look dumb as fuck. It's like, if you're cheerleading and you know, like, you're wearing underwear.
Right.
Not only are you wearing underwear, you're wearing bloomers on top of the underwear. So that part never matched for me. It's like, your digits are going to slip. It's going to slip in through. And, or, like, come on, man. Like, what are you doing, champ?
Right.
Yeah, Jan. Jan. What's that short for?
Well, we Jandice. See it play out. We see it play out a few scenes later at the football game where he's doing the lift, and then we see her reaction, and she's like, it almost seems like she's enjoying it, which is like
it's
very
psychotic,
fucked up.
Yeah.
And but then she like he lets her down, and then she kind of hits him. But we see him on screen assault her while they're cheering.
And then there's another scene where I think it's Missy and one of the cheerleaders, male cheerleaders, is like stretching her leg out. And there's two guys that pass. And
the two
like,
football jocks who have been like harassing the male cheerleaders the whole movie.
Right. And then they're like, oh, maybe we should join the team because they're. They're like looking at like, oh, they're touching girls. And then the other one just says a gay slur to the other one.
And then the scene is over. And that's a scene that exists forever.
Yep. I probably missed some, and I'm just going to do a few more. Okay, so there's the car wash scene where we see, like, a close-up of Eliza Dushku's chest, and then it's... Because it's her brother ogling her until he realizes it's his sister. And then he's like, oh, no. But it means we have this, like, very male gaze shot of, like, just a woman's breast.
You have that whole sequence is just, like, getting allegedly teen girls wet, even though, as with most of these movies that Kirsten Dunst is in, Kirsten Dunst is the only legitimate teenager. Kirsten Dunst and a bunch of 27-year-olds.
Yeah.
Also, a quick fact check, a car wash is not a good fundraiser.
Oh, it's not. Did you do one all by yourself? As me.
Caitlin Durante, Savage Moments, Part 3. Holy shit.
I've been attacked. I remember, like, in, like, elementary and then junior high, and even, like, my friends who, like, cheered at, like, normal high schools and stuff, like, that was just never... No one wants a bunch of teen girls washing their car for $20.
No, and they're never in, like, it's so movie to imply that all car washes are hot teens in bikinis. Because I did that with the Key Club.
Yeah.
And we were wearing, like, 3 shirts. We were wearing extra shirts.
And y'all
shirts.
Probably didn't make much money, did you?
No, no.
Like $160, and it was, like, a 12-hour day.
Right. Oh.
And it was, like, all y'all's moms coming through.
To be nice. Yes. Yeah, it was, like, moms and neighbors being like, okay, but don't touch it.
That's enough washing.
Yeah, bad idea, bad for business.
That's just a fact check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that.
And their children. And so please stop looking at them.
Yeah. Yep. And then the last one I'll say, there are more, but we're running out of time, is the choreographer, Sparky, whatever the fuck his name is.
Literally everything he does.
Everything he says.
Everything he does
is just wildly horrible. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing with all of these moments. In some cases, the characters who are using the homophobic slurs or who are using the language that's like body shaming or slut shaming, they are framed as being like bad, wrong people. Like when it's the football players who are harassing people and stuff like that. But in other cases, these things are being said by the characters who are supposed to like and supposed to be rooting for. Like whenever Missy uses the various like homophobic slurs, or when they're all laughing along when the guy is admitting to assaulting his teammate.
Yeah, teehee. And there's not much to, just because I do want to get to the Clovers, but as for Missy, again, I feel like her character suffers because of Cliff's presence.
Yeah.
So many suffer at the hands of Cliff. So many, because she starts out as like a pretty interesting, you know, it's like she's a goth, and I'm like, I'm on board. But, you know, it's like, and she and Tor form a friendship. It's an unlikely friendship. But once Cliff starts to get too involved, she almost gets sidelined, and she's only like serving as like, oh, Cliff said that you got nice boobs. And you're just like, man, this is a waste of Eliza Dushku, first of all. And then it's like their friendship gets sidelined kind of until the very, very end, which is a bummer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that, let's talk about the Clovers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, again, it's we really only know Isis in any meaningful way, played by Gabrielle Union. Mm-hmm. And she's really fucking cool. Like, I love that character. Yeah. And it's frustrating that you don't get to know her better because there's space in the movie to do it. Yeah. And the movie just literally chooses not to do it. But
Much emotional depth if you would have like really concentrated on the story behind them. Like there was really an opportunity for that they just let fall.
Yeah. Right. Because like, I mean, in most cases when you're seeing, I mean, fucking Varsity Blues and shit like that, if you see the cheerleaders, they're like, it's a bunch of like suburban white people. So like just to give visibility to this group of cheerleaders who are all people of color, and then like, what's their experience like? I want to know more. And then the movie just like glosses over that whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but there are a few lines from Isis. When we do get to see her, we get to see her almost always in control of the situation. Sometimes that's framed as her being the villain, and then later on it you can see her and Tor starting to form like this captain's respect, which, you know, all captains will know.
She basically
there's
has
a respect.
There's a line where in the she's like, "Hey, you guys have been stealing from us, but no longer. I'm the captain now." It's a Captain
I'm
Phillips.
I'm the captain now. They also say, do the right thing over and over. And I'm like, are they talking about the Spike Lee movie? Where they Kirsten also... Dunst keeps being like, I want to do the right thing. I was like, do you know what you're saying?
She just looks at the camera. I want to do the right thing.
And then she does a little wink and flashes her snaggle tooth. You're like, what is going on here? And then she goes to East Con and drives, once again, 3 hours. I'm like, there's got to be a phone number.
Yeah. But also,
she drives 3 hours, goes to see Isis and like all the Clover cheerleaders and offers her white savior daddy check and says, once again, I'm trying to do the right thing. And it was like, what the fuck is going on in this script? It's so fucking weird.
There's also a fun moment where one of the Clovers calls Missy and Torrance Buffy's, which is fun because Eliza Dushku played Faith in Buffy the Vampire Slayer right around this time. So
fun fact.
But her saying, I want to do the right thing, that further makes her into the good person.
Yeah.
She's very verbally saying she's trying to do the right thing. She's trying to be the right person, and you're not letting her do the right thing.
Yeah.
It's just a microaggression.
Yeah. I do like Isis gives a pretty concise response that I really like. She says when Kirsten Dunst comes with her white guilt check, Isis replies, like, what is this, hush money? Oh, right, it's guilt money. You pay our way in, and you sleep better at night knowing how your whole world was based on one big old fat lie, and then she tears the check up. And that's, like, a great cathartic moment where you're like, you're right, fuck Kirsten Dunst's dad, who we just saw for the first time and the last time in the movie. Fucking daddy, like, get out of here. And then she, you know, pulls out the captain speak. She's like, I'm trying to be strong for my squad. I'm a captain. We're like, we know. The captain talk is strong in this movie. But I mean, it's so weird because I feel like I don't know, like we were talking about earlier, I don't know how the movie is supposed, it wants us to feel about this scene. But watching it now, I feel like we're all like, tear the check up. Yeah, fuck that.
Right. But I think in 2000, the way everything was then, the movie frames all the Clovers as the mean adversaries that are causing problems and being mean.
Yeah. There is a quote about from Gabrielle Union about being in Bring It On that I wanted to read to you as sort of like an insight of where she was at around this time. She's also 28 in this movie, which you're like, how is that possible? It's
black
wild.
Black don't crack.
Extremely. It's wild. Okay, so she says about getting cast in Bring It On. She says, I wanted this cheerleading movie Sugar and Spice, but they didn't go black on any of their roles. I couldn't even audition. For Bring It On, the story is about cultural appropriation and how the hard work of African Americans has been repackaged with blonde hair and blue eyes. The social justice of it appealed to me, which is great that that is what she saw. But the fact, I mean, just even bringing up that she wasn't allowed to audition for this other cheerleading movie because they didn't, quote unquote, go black is like such an insight to where casting was then and just like what her options were. Like, I'm so glad she was in Bring It On, but that quote, I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. This is such a problem. Like, it's a problematic movie with problematic parts, but this was the best option.
Right, yeah, know? Right.
This was the option.
Right.
Like, it was an appetizing-looking option on top of that, which is, you know, like you said, it just speaks to what was going on at the time and, like, what the reality of the film industry was back then. You know.
Yeah, and so it's like...
hardly gotten better.
Yay!
It's fixed. 100%
yeah, I'm so sorry. Everything's good.
All thankfully, in 2019, we've resolved it. Everything is great. We got a check from Daddy, and it's fixed. It's fine. I mean, in general, I'm very glad that the Clovers win and that the screenwriter had the foresight to, like, because in every way, they're the superior team because they've never plagiarized anyone. They've earned everything they've gotten, and, like, they're a better, I mean, they have the better routine every single time. So I'm glad that they got, in my head, I was like, they got School of Rocked, where... We're like the ragtag team of young white people lose, and it's fun to watch. But I wish that there were more to criticize because I wish we knew more about these characters in general. But there's just like not, we just don't know enough about
them. The movie
them.
Should be told from their point of view. Like it should have been a different script, different story told from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. On that note, like we don't know a lot about them and she didn't know a lot about them. But the check, when she got the check from her dad, like she bullied her dad into getting the dad's company to write a check.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what could she possibly have told him to tell them to write the check?
Oh.
Like, hey, I need a check for some black girls that my daughter was stealing from cheerleading wise. Can you give me $8,000 so they can get to Florida? Like, what could you have told them? Like,
right.
And that's just another thing. Like, you just walk, like, this guy just has the privilege to walk into his employer and be like, I need money to get a team of people to nationals. And his company was just like, is your kid in it? No. I guess. No follow-up questions for like, this is not my child squad. This is random kids 3 hours south. Right. And they were still cool with it.
And that like Tor was expecting to just come in with a check that clearly Isis would have no idea where this money is from. She doesn't know who Kirsten Dunst's dad is. We don't know who Kirsten Dunst's dad is. And that Kirsten Dunst was coming from this place of just like, well, you're going to want it, right? And then like she's like, no, what is this? Who is this from? Like, I feel like her dad would like work for Enron or something.
Yeah, something like that.
There, did someone just awe for Enron? An interesting choice.
I would say if I was in Isis's position, I would have crumpled up the thing in front of her and thrown it. And then when she left, gone. smoothed it out.
Money.
Deposited it.
Like, well, I made my point.
Like, she won't know. Like, what is she going to know? Like,
I'm fine with taking
it. Enron's not going to miss $8,000.
They're not. She's never going to find out if I did it or not.
That's fine. One thing I did like about this movie, and it also brought up different, like, I mean, it liked it, didn't like, was that you so infrequently get to see young girls being athletic in any way on screen, and getting to see, there's a lot of really athletic routines, and there's, like, a lot of behind-the-scenes talk of, like, all the main cast of this movie had to go to cheer camp together. There's some really cute behind-the-scenes pics of, like, Kirsten Dunst and Gabrielle Union stretching and, like, being friends, and it's cute. But you know, getting to see girls be athletic is not something you get to see in a lot of teen movies, really, ever.
Yeah.
And so it's cool, because, I mean, I remember in junior high seeing, like, these routines and being like, oh, that's so cool, and like going home and like fucking loser dancing it out at my house, which is like, I mean, it's like these movies do affect you, and it made me wish that, you know, there were more movies that you got to see girls be athletic in different ways, because you're only, you know, when I was younger, I really wanted to be a dancer, and I'm sure that a lot of that reason was because that was how I had seen girls be athletic in like popular culture, is that you're dancing, you're cheering, you can only do a few different things, and it's like, man, like there should be more movies about girls playing sports and like doing other athletic shit, because there's so few options for stuff like that. So
I mean,
it's
there's
cool.
like 5,000 movies about men playing football. And like
winning the game,
10 movies about women's sports teams, period.
I love movies about when the boys win the game at the last minute.
Yeah, they're the best.
Good genre.
On that note, I like that the movie showed the athleticism of cheerleading.
Yes.
People a lot of the time think of cheerleading as just like, oh, you're just shaking pom poms and dancing and shaking your butt or whatever. But like, my senior project was. on cheerleading injuries. And cheerleading is like the number two catastrophic sport. It's after football. And football, they wear a ton of like, yeah, there's like a ton of athleticism required with cheerleading. And I like that this movie really showcased that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, and getting to see, I appreciated getting to see full routines too. Yeah. Like, that was really cool. And there, I mean, there's still so much, if you want to fall down the rabbit hole of how professional cheerleaders are treated now, it's like such a wild thing where most of them aren't unionized, most of them are paid like minimum wage, and like professional team cheer, like for football, like major American football, you know, where the football players are making millions and millions of dollars. There are some cheerleaders out there who are making nothing and and getting injured like at a comparable rate. So it's still like a sport that isn't being taken seriously. And I don't know, it is cool to just see women being athletic and kicking ass.
Yeah, like they don't require a cheerleading coach to have any kind of training.
As demonstrated by Mr. Spirit Fingers.
Yeah, they just let Sparky McGorakin or whoever his name was show up and
that
tell people what
convict
to do.
That they gave $2,000 to. Don't do that.
My name is Spanky. Like
that guy. They're like, cool. We'll get the $2,000.
Kirsten's dad is getting it for us.
Daddy's got it. Do you have anything else, Kaylee?
Not really. I feel like we've only scratched the surface of this wild, wild movie. But
there's so much here.
I guess it is cool that you see the athleticism of cheerleading, that you see cheerleading as a sport being taken seriously. You see a female-driven story where the women are driving the narrative.
You see a lot of different personality types among the women that you see, which is like usually not something that you get. There's women in conflict and you understand why, which almost never happens.
Sometimes, and then sometimes it's Courtney and Whitney being mean for no reason.
Right. So. I mean, I guess I was more talking about like the Tor and Missy, Tor and Isis. Like there are some female conflicts where you're like, these people are very different and I understand why they do not agree. Such as Tor is stealing constantly. And she's like, I don't know, April was so mad at me.
She's
like,
know.
I do.
Yeah, I think that was all I had.
Sick, all right.
Yeah. Maggie, do you have anything else?
I think that we covered all the points and aired all of my grievances with this movie.
That's why we're here. This movie definitely passes the Bechdel test.
Oh, yeah, a lot.
A million billion times over, which is great.
A lot of the exchanges are like, you're a stupid slut, you dumb bitch.
And then the other girl is like, yes. And we're like, well, it technically passes. Flawed metric happens
also,
all the time.
A lot of the conversations are, you know, about cheerleading and training and their goals. And
you should take a science class. No.
Right. So handily passes.
Yeah.
Let's rate on our nipple scale.
Let's do it.
0 to 5 nipples based on the representation of women. I think I'll go, yes, we know it's from 2000 and all the problematic things that come with that. So it's like a 2, I suppose. Docking a lot of points for all the problematic shit that happens and the fact that it should have been an entirely different movie told from the point of view of Isis and her Clover Squad. Basing it on the movie that we are presented with, I'll give it 2 nipples. Didn't mention the pretty nice moment at the very end with Les and another like unnamed male cheerleader at Nationals, and they're like, hey, good job out there. And the other one's like, hey, you too, cool. And then it's like, I guess they're gonna kiss later? I don't know. But like, but that comes at the end of such a long string of like homophobia and just horribleness that I was like, well, that's a nice moment, but remember all the other stuff
but
you did earlier
cost?
In the movie?
Yeah.
So 2 nipples, and I'll give both to Gabrielle Union. Yeah.
I'll go 2.5. I think that there needs to be such a move towards the women of color in this movie, because that is not just like doing the right thing, if you will, but it's the more interesting story is on the conflict between these two teams. Like, fuck the romance subplots that get shoehorned in later. The interesting parts of this movie are these white girls are stealing from these black girls because they feel entitled to do so, mm-hmm. and the conflict that ensues there. Like, that is the interesting part of the movie. I think that there's so much more there, and there's more interesting story, there's more message there, and just getting to know the black characters in this movie is such an important thing that just didn't happen. There was a couple of lines, and then we get 45 minutes of Cliff. Like, give me a fucking break. It doesn't focus on the characters we need to be focusing on. It doesn't give the screen time to the characters that we need to know. I would like to know, you know, it's like we know Isis, sort of, but we don't, like, the characters that she's surrounded by are basically indistinguishable because we only meet them once or twice. And so it, yeah, I mean, on that front, it's very frustrating. I am glad that you get to see women in conflict in a way that makes sense a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you get women with different opinions, different personalities. You get to see them being athletic. There's a lot of good things going on, but there's a lot of fat that could be trimmed in favor of a story that is better and more interesting and just it makes more sense for this movie to be. So I'll do 2.5. I give 1.5 to Isis. I'll leave her hanging with the last half. And then I'm going to give the last one to Tor's mom because she should take a science class.
I will give this movie, I would say, 2 nipples and like a hair. You
ooh,
know?
Okay. A nipple, I like this. Hair? This is new.
2 nipples and an ingrown hair.
That's like 1.95.
I did like that it was a cheerleading movie. It's relevant to all my interests. I did like that it had a lot of women and more women than men. And I did like that it was a movie where ultimately, like, if you watched it, you could see that the women of color were in the right. Like, if you really, mm-hmm. like, waded past, you know, mm-hmm. their little narrative, you could really see what was going on. And then they won at the end. I liked that to no end. But, you know, for a lot of the reasons why we've already discussed, like, it doesn't hold up. You look back on it and you're like, wow, this movie was trying to be something and missing that mm-hmm. mark, 100%. So, yeah. And I'm gonna give all of my nipples to the Clover Squad. I'm gonna yeah. go ahead and do that. The ingrown hair, everybody else can fight over that.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
I hope what happens with this movie is it becomes one of those stepping stone movies of, like, it did not do what it thought it was doing, and let whoever makes the next cheerleading movie learn from it, learn from its strengths and weaknesses, and then we can just move on, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Because it still kind of did characterize cheerleaders in a certain kind of way as dumb, which is like...
Yeah.
Like, you need to, like, you have academic benchmarks you have to pass. Like,
right.
You can't still be, like, pass high school.
Fucking stupid and be a true, like, right. That's not a thing.
Right. But, totally. Yeah.
Well, Maggie, thank you so much for yeah. joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Where can give it up for Maggie.
Hey. Thanks.
Where can people follow you online? Do you have anything you would like to plug?
Yes, I am on Twitter and Instagram. I'm Maggie May Hahas. Maggie, spelled normally, M-A-G-G-I-E, and then M-A-Y-E-H-A-H-A. Plan C.
Yeah.
At the York, Jamie and I.
With the live show.
Yeah.
That they put on right here in Los Angeles.
Totally. Yeah, that's
I mean, Sam Angeles.
And
Sam Angeles!
That was not that funny.
Yes, it was. That was even funnier.
With other past guests of the show, including Ever Maynard and Atsuko.
Yes, hell yeah. Thank you again so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Give it up for yourselves for being here.
Give it up for Aristotle. He's
here.
And give it up for the Ruby. Thank you to everyone at the Ruby. And thanks so much for coming.
Good
Have
night.
A great night.
Thank you.
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Ladies and gentlemen.
We are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast, and I had the opportunity to talk to one of Hollywood's major icons, Michael B. Jordan. In our conversation, Michael shares the highs, the lows, and everything in between, offering a genuine glimpse into his world.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. People give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.